Comics Therapy, Episode 15. No reviews, just analysis. Happy Halloween, kids! We have a special treat for you this week. Two comics from October 30th, 2013. Five Ghosts number 6 and Infinity number 5. Plus, the return of grief counseling for The Walking Dead Volume 9. I know, but rest assured, this was actually all my idea, and I'm totally fine, you'll see. Joining us on the couch for this horror show, writer Christopher Sabella. And just as a reminder, we don't do reviews, but we do talk a lot. Mostly me. If you haven't read the books that we're discussing, we may spoil something for you. Sorry.
Hi, Aaron. Hi, Andy. It's Jason Sachs, publisher at Comics Bulletin. I have a nerd confession for you this week based on my wonderful day yesterday at Geek Girl Con, which is a fun two-day convention here in Seattle about geek culture. My confession is that I love reading comics, just love them very, very much. But even more than I love reading comics, I love talking to comics creators because, by and large, they are some of the coolest, most interesting, most fun people to speak to. I talked to Kelly Sue DeConnick this weekend after you guys' conversation with her, and she was so happy to have that conversation brought up and talked to me. And she's just a truly nice person, as you guys know. And she's just kind of typical of all the people I know in comics. And the vast majority of them are just really awesomely cool people. So there's my happy nerd confession for this weekend. Thanks a lot. Keep up the good work, guys. Bye.
Welcome to Comics Therapy. Neither Andrea nor I are licensed therapists, so don't take anything we say as serious medical advice. The theme of the show this week is, well, sort of scary Halloween stuff. Sort of me getting to talk about Infinity again. But Andrea, I read more of The Walking Dead, so that's thematic, right?
In between comic segments, your very own nerd confessions and nerd stories. We want to celebrate the little geeky things that we all do, say, read, and enjoy. Share them with us, and we'll share them on an upcoming episode of the show. You can call, Skype, or email your story. All the details are on the website, comicstherapy.com. Remember, catharsis is cool.
And in between shows, you can find me on Twitter, at Aaron Myers. And you can find Andrea, at Andrea Schock. And of course, the show account is, at Comics Therapy. So, Andrea, how are you this week?
I'm fine. I don't have much to report. I mean, I'm having a week, maybe with, like, capitals, like, a week. But it's not that exciting or interesting. It's just kind of a bummer, but it'll be fine. So, you know.
Bummercast.
Yeah. No, I actually think that I'm in an okay mood for recording. Like, you know, you bring out the good stuff in me, Aaron. I'm so excited to talk to you. It's going to be fabulous. I am excited for Halloween, though, so.
Yeah, I am more excited for Halloween now that Luke is at an age where Halloween is more fun for him. Like, 2 is too young for Halloween, really. 3, he seems to be getting it more.
Yeah, I agree. I think I went through a couple of years where I was, I don't know, I got annoyed at Halloween and how overtly scary it is, especially for kids. And, you know, you walk through Halloween sections of stores and you see zombie costumes and, I don't know, like serial killer costumes for little kids. And I'm like, what the fuck are you thinking as a parent? I'm just not into that. Yeah. But I think that I've actually gotten to the point with Avi. I mean, he's still dressing like a kid, but he is less scared by some of the extra stuff. And so I can relax my guard a little bit. And so I'm more excited for it this year than I have been.
Yeah, it's a weird age for kids. Like, Luke is 3.5. And as long as we, like, present things as totally pretend before he even sees them, and, like, as he's seeing them, like, this is pretend, that's makeup, that isn't real. Like, we were watching Thriller, the music video.
Right. Any particular reason?
No.
Okay.
I don't know why.
I feel like you're extra excited about it.
It was just fun to revisit. Like, I hadn't watched the video in a long time.
Right.
And I forgot that it's, like, 6 minutes long.
Yeah. Yeah, there's that whole, like, extra part at the beginning that's kind of a story, but then it doesn't actually make any sense.
You probably haven't watched it for
a while. I haven't.
It makes sense if you watch it. It's just, like, stories within stories, and a lot of the song really isn't even in the music video.
I remember that event when that it was shown on primetime television. Do you remember that when we were kids?
No.
Oh, man.
I don't think I got to watch it.
I don't think I did either. But I remember that it was a thing. And that, in fact, I'm positive that we weren't allowed to watch it. But I remember that my mom was interested in seeing it. And so it wasn't until later that I saw... I remember the thing he does with the eyes being, like, super creepy. But, no, you're right. I haven't seen the entire thing in a while.
No, I think as a kid, like, the scariest Halloween thing I got to see was, like, Punky Brewster's Halloween special.
That's adorable.
That was scary. She gets, like, trapped. I forget exactly what happens, but she's, like, trapped in this cave, and there's, like, a giant spider in it and stuff. And I think we had to turn it off because it freaked me out so bad.
So you watched Thriller with Luke, but it was fine.
Right. And he was fine with it, but then he wanted to see it over and over, so I put it on his little iPod Touch.
Mm, got it.
And so he's been watching it and doing the zombie dance, like, all week, which is pretty cute.
Nice. Avi's dance class last week, that's what they did. They learned, like, a new bit of choreography for the first half of Thriller, just for funsies. The kids were really into it.
Yeah, it's fun. So, but it's fairly scary. Like, if I just handed it to him, he would have freaked out. Like, it's... You know, that's pretty scary for a kid, but as long as you, like, buffer it with, like, that's fake, that, oh, those are dressed up, oh, those are people, you know, in makeup, and he's seen enough of that in the store to, right, like, make it click. It wouldn't work a year ago.
But it's still, it's kind of a creepy conversation topic, right, that you're sort of broaching, like, hey, this holiday is kind of all about death. No big deal. It's fun.
Yeah, I think next year... it's going to be more of that.
Yeah.
Like, I think at 4, it'll be more like, wait, why do we dress up like scary and dead people,
right,
and try to scare each other? This doesn't make any sense.
We had this, like, weird middle couple of years where he was more sensitive to it, and, like, Lord knows I'm more sensitive to it. So I just felt, like, extra protective. And we went trick-or-treating in Pittsburgh a couple of years ago, and there was a woman set up outside with... like, her hands in such a way... Oh, that's right. She had, like, fake hands holding the bucket of candy, and then her actual hands were like, underneath so that they could, like, reach out and grab the kids,
mm-hmm,
which is maybe fine for, like, a 10-year-old, but she did it to my 4-year-old, and he flipped out and took off running, like, down the street. And so then I had to take off running after him because he's, like, running away. I was so pissed at the... I don't know, the gall of that particular woman to project her excitement of freaking little kids out onto my little kid who was not ready for that at all.
Yeah, it's really a crazy, horrible holiday for kids.
But I'm getting better with it. Like, I'm actually, like I said, I'm excited for it. I'm excited for Avi's costume. I'm excited for, like, all of the fun extra stuff that happens. What is Luke being this year?
He doesn't know yet. He wants to either be Jake from Jake and the Neverland Pirates, or a zombie, or a Ninja Turtle, or wear his Spider-Man poncho.
Does he know that Halloween is tomorrow?
Yeah, you know, time doesn't really make any sense when you're 3.
Hmm.
So I think it'll be more like a, okay, we're gonna go trick-or-treating, which one do you want to put on?
Oh, so you have all of those things?
Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah. Goodwill actually has quite a selection of really cheap costumes, so we just been buying, like, $2 or $3 costumes.
Nice.
I mean, why not?
Yeah.
You can't have too many costumes, right?
I completely agree. Yeah. Avi's got a whole box of cool costumes.
Yeah.
So.
So do I. Oh, he has that Superboy costume, too, but he was wearing that the other day and running around the park.
So, what about your costume?
What am I going to dress up as?
Uh-huh. Because you guys have those matching ones that I'm not allowed to talk about.
Yeah, I'll probably wear that. But I don't think Luke will wear his. I mean, maybe. We'll see.
Wait, are you really? Can we put a picture up of it?
Yeah, I'll have Chrissy take a picture tomorrow.
Awesome.
You can't have the picture that Chrissy sent you. That's your blackmail picture.
It is such a brilliant, brilliant picture, by the way. Man, I should remind myself of that every time I get pissed off about anything that you make me do.
Mm-hmm.
Just pull out that picture and say, is it bad enough yet? No, not yet. But one day.
It has to be pretty bad for that.
Has to be pretty bad. Okay, anything else about your week?
Nope.
You want to talk about some comics?
Yeah, let's do that.
You want to talk really shortly about one particular comic?
Yeah, how about like 90 seconds?
Yeah, approximately.
Okay.
So every week I give Aaron 90 seconds to talk about whatever he wants that we're not going to talk about elsewhere. 90 seconds, one book, one new comic from the past week that we're not analyzing. He's been doing really well with following the rules. Are you ready this week?
Yeah.
Are you going to follow the rules this week?
Of course.
Okay, let's go. Begin.
Okay, so this week I want to talk about the comics community.
That's not a comic.
Yeah, well, I'm cheating this week.
Oh, for the love of God.
Okay, so stop wasting my time. So this is about the comics community, and I was just thinking really about how I love reading comics, but I also love equally talking to people about comics.
Okay.
I think it's almost 50-50 at this point. Like, I wouldn't get as much pleasure from reading comics if I didn't have a group of people who were equally passionate about them and who wanted to contribute. Like, this really was something I was thinking about doing. I do this column for the Comicosity website called Honor Roll, which is sort of like a group of people's selections of their favorite comic of the week. And it just amazes me that it's always a very wide selection of choices. It's not always like the same one. You know, it's not like 10 people giving me basically the same choice.
Right.
Everyone usually picks something different, and they all are valid and great picks. And that's what's great about literature. You know, it's so subjective, but at the same time, the comics community is so tied, you know, where it's a small, kind of close-knit community, and people talk about all the stuff they love and share it with each other.
10 seconds.
That's how it all kind of filters down. It's just really special. It's really something that we should.
Time's up. So basically, you are feeling in the spirit of the season, like all kind of lovey-dovey sappy.
Yeah, just about comics nerds, though. Everyone else can suck it.
Oh, almost. Almost. Am I ever going to hear you drop the F-bomb on the show?
I'd have to have more than a third of a bottle of wine.
Wait, you drank a third of a bottle of wine this afternoon?
Yeah. I can't talk to you unless I'm drunk.
I thought you meant you had a third of a bottle of beer.
No. No.
Okay. Let's talk about some comics for real. Not
all right.
Not breaking the rules.
So I lived in San Diego for 3 years, and kind of embarrassing, I never went to Comic-Con once, even when Gillian Anderson, a.k.a. Special Agent Dana Scully from the X-Files, came to speak, and she was my biggest crush growing up as a kid. I guess I was just pretty scared to go and face all those nerds. And speaking of scary, my name's Jake Arkey, and I'm a playwright. And if you're in the New York City area, you should come see my play, My Friend Dahmer, as part of Dahmer and Friends, An Unsettling Night of Theater, at 68 Theater in NYC. We run through Saturday, November 2nd, which is when I'll be there closing out the show. You can get tickets at www.theater68nyc.com or call 212-330-8171. My Friend Dahmer, that is based on the graphic novel by Durf, and it's a pretty, pretty awesome tale of how friends make monsters. I also have another play called The Birthday Girl that's in there. Come on down. Check them out. Poop your pants. It's going to be awesome. See you there, nerdlingers.
Our first book this week is Five Ghosts Number 6, written by Frank Barbieri, drawn by Gary Brown, colors by Lauren Aff, and lettering by Dylan Todd. Five Ghosts is published by Image Comics.
Yeah, this is a one-shot before Five Ghosts Number 7, a new ongoing, picks up where the miniseries left off. Fabian Gray is a master thief with a secret. He's possessed by five literary ghosts, the thief, the samurai, the detective, the archer, and the vampire. And he's been granted access to their unique abilities. Think Indiana Jones and Doctor Strange, sort of. He's pretty awesome. He has a straight man sidekick, Sebastian, who doesn't appear in this issue. And he's more interestingly, perhaps, like, actually more haunted by what befell his beloved sister Sylvia than by his ghosts themselves.
Yeah, I mean, the haunting is more of a literary term. It's more like he has the ability of these literary characters, which I think we found in the miniseries is more than just literary. They're actual, like, avatars, I guess.
Sure.
I think that's what I described them more as.
Sure, but he has... I mean, it's not just the abilities. It's also the control or lack thereof. I mean, think about what happens to him and his awareness of his surroundings, like when the vampire comes into the picture, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just the kind of clean ability to tap into, oh, I can shoot some arrows now. It's a little bit more insidious than that. And I think that for Fabian, watching how he's balancing that control and loss of control is really intriguing.
Well, it's really intriguing, too, for the type of character he is. It's like you have to have all this control over these abilities. So I think this is a great place for people to jump on, even if they didn't read the miniseries, because it kind of resets the board.
Right.
And this is a, even though you can say it's a this meets this, mm-hmm. it's still a pretty unique book, especially in, I would say, the last 10 years. I don't think I've really read anything like this.
Yeah. I think everybody should read the miniseries. And the trade came out in September, and I think that there's no excuse if you're going to jump on board with this. Because there was so much about his kind of inner turmoil that we just don't have time to get into with this particular issue. And that's the part that I think is what makes his story unique. It was not what I was expecting, and that's always a good thing. I remember the moment when... it's revealed that this, woman that he's kind of, pining slash guilt tripping over was a sister and not a lover. And I just thought that was, like, that is a notable difference in, like, stock kind of character attributes that I thought was really interesting. And as we learn more and more about their relationship and, like, how involved she was with the whole, like, Dreamstone acquisition, I think it's good stuff.
It is, but even as a more interesting kind of bigger picture part of the story, really what I find interesting to think about is more this, the literary aspect of it, these tropes that he's haunted by.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as an English nerd, it makes you think of, like, stereotypes and characters and using those stereotypes as powers, in a way.
Mm-hmm. No, it's very academic. I think that's also appealing, and that is something else that's different. I don't think you have to be an English nerd if that is, like, off-putting to anybody. Because there's a lot of, in addition to those literary tropes that he can tap into, he's a kind of dashing, like, thiefy kind of guy anyway.
Yeah, I mean, right. It's at its core, it's an adventure story.
Yeah.
But a good story, adventure, action, whatever, still has more you can build upon.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want, you can read more into it, and it gives you a lot more to think about,
mm-hmm.
which is why I find it really interesting, too.
Yeah. I keep going back to the, like, loss of control part, though, because from a storytelling perspective, I think that's there's so much possibility there for somebody who, like, he was a thief anyway. He was an adventurer and, like, an artifact gatherer in that early 20th century kind of way that I don't know. Did those kind of people actually exist? Treasure hunters in that way?
I guess.
Maybe I don't want to know because...
We certainly have a lot of it in literature, and there's a lot of stories based around it, but...
And it's like... It's a beloved character type for me. Like, I'm a huge Indiana Jones fan.
Yeah.
So if it's all bunk, maybe I don't actually want to know that. But he fits, like, Fabian fits that mold. So he has, like, the skills to back that up. And so I would actually be interested in him kind of before... Or I would have been interested in him before as a regular character. But, you know, he's a little bit of a ladies' man. He's a little bit of a like punk in the way that he is very confident in his abilities. And now he just has like a bunch of ghosts to call on as needed. That's good stuff.
Yeah, and there's a complexity to a character that can be built here, because a adventurer, kind of swashbuckler, ladies' man, that sort of thing, wouldn't necessarily have the control of these powers that you're talking about, too. So there's more complexity to his character than we're first led to believe.
Mm-hmm. And we've seen him fail at that control. And I think that's the part that I am like looking forward to the creative team exploring some more when they have a longer like arc to really delve into it.
Yeah, me too. Well, we'll see what happens in the future. Yeah. We'll come back to this, you know, after this next arc.
Yeah, absolutely.
You ready to move on?
This is the life model decoy of Victor von Zoom calling in for this week's Nerd Confession. The following is a dream that I had, because, of course, LMD's dream. Me and my wife are at a comic book convention watching a slideshow presentation Mike Allred is giving. A local political blogger is in the room making fun of, quote, all the nerds, quote, backslash, backslash. A few of us ask the guy to leave the hall, as he's obviously at the wrong convention. The guy then turns to one of us and says, parenthesis, in a Donald Duck voice, end parenthesis, quote, what, you gonna get Howard the Duck to kick my ass, end quote. Then VA gentle nerd jumps in, quote, fuck this shit, you don't mock Howard, end quote, and roundhouse kicks the dude in the face. That's it. Thanks. Parenthesis. Aaron, can you imitate a robot as you read this question mark? Thanks, Tom. End parenthesis.
Next up, we have Infinity number 5, written by John Hickman with art by Jerome Opina and Dustin Weaver, color by Justin Ponzer, and lettering by Chris Eliopoulos. Infinity number 5 is the 5th of 6 books, 6-book event published by Marvel Comics. Of course, you also need to be reading Avengers and New Avengers to have a clue about what's going on, not to mention all the tie-ins, so I'm going to let Aaron fanboy out a little bit to catch us all up to speed if you are not reading these.
Oh, so you want to know what Infinity's about?
I know what Infinity's about. I'm reading them all.
It's about the end of the universe. Except it's not, because the Avengers are heroes and they saved us all from the Builders. You're welcome.
Yeah, they kind of did.
Yeah. Thor threw his hammer through a star for you. Thank you very much. You're welcome.
Yeah. Yeah, that was sort of badass.
Yeah. Also, it's about Thanos taking over Earth.
Right.
While the Avengers are saving us all.
God, yeah, they just look away for a minute and everything goes to hell.
Yeah, you're welcome.
What do you mean you're welcome?
Yeah, they saved us all.
Again!
So, Thanos is here on Earth to kill his son and maybe blow the planet up too.
Well, they left a weapon out. They shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, well, that's because the multiverse is collapsing, but the Illuminati are blowing up alternate Earths so we don't die. Again, you're welcome.
You really love this, don't you?
Yeah. And also, the Inhumans have all been activated, so there are a lot of Inhumans now on Earth. So
right.
You're welcome.
Wait, why is that a good thing?
Because Inhumans are awesome. Black Bolt is my second favorite Marvel character.
Oh, for real?
You're welcome.
I didn't know that, actually.
Yeah.
Who is your first?
Rom Space Knight.
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, I know. he saved all of Galador and sacrificed himself in an earlier issue of Infinity. You're welcome.
Uh-huh. He didn't actually save all of Galador. In fact, that's addressed in this... Is it this issue or the most recent, like, number 4, maybe? Like, the Space Knights who remained, who weren't able to save their planet, got to help another planet. Oh, thanks, guys. We get the B-team.
Yeah, well, for Galador. You're welcome.
Uh-huh.
So that's what's happening. Easy peasy.
Tell me why this is so awesome.
Well, okay. So let's talk about events.
Yes, let's.
Okay. So most events suck, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I would say that more often than not, an event is just a waste of money on books that if you're invested in Marvel or DC, you're just buying a lot of, and they're not very fulfilling. Not yeah. always. There are some good events, but rarely are there great events.
There are a couple others happening right now that we are not as excited about.
Yeah. So why does this work?
Yeah.
It works because the writing is excellent and there's a cohesive storyline.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of the time you get events where things are so disjointed and you have so many different writers writing parts of the story that it doesn't make sense to the reader who's trying to follow along.
Right.
And for me, Infinity works so well because it's so epic and it's so big, but the architecture of it mm-hmm. stays together. Like it flows mm-hmm. if you're reading it week by week. Mm-hmm. And it's on such a massive scale, and the people working on it, art-wise and writing-wise, are so talented that it's like, it's a good story. And that's really all you need to be a successful event.
Right.
Like, I don't think there's a premise for really any events that have come up that aren't good. It's just the execution is rarely good because the creative teams are just not on board.
So how much do you think is due to the fact that Jonathan Hickman has been, like, the capital A architect the whole time?
Oh, I think for sure. Yeah, and it's not just capital A architect in executing Infinity. This has been, in the works for a year and a half.
Right.
And it's also Marvel standing behind a creator and letting him tell the story and letting it unfold.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also, it's like, fine. After every event, there's always the event afterwards. And it's like, I couldn't be more excited for Inhumanity that comes after it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're already seeing all the stuff that comes with Inhumanity with Infinity.
Right.
And it's not like, oh, well, how am I supposed to keep up with this when this is happening? They all tie together. It's mm-hmm. just flow of a comic book universe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is the first time I feel like everything is really working the way it should.
Yeah, I don't disagree. If you remember, my concerns about Avengers from the very beginning were more, I don't know, I wasn't ready to jump into Epic with an individual title. Okay, so like
mm-hmm.
blah blah blah, it's about the characters, blah blah blah. I just got overwhelmed. This is doing a really admirable job of balancing like epic story with the character moments. And part of that is bouncing in between Infinity and then Avengers and New Avengers. So there's like literally so much more real estate than just the event books to give those moments for like context or big picture versus small picture, etc.
Yeah.
But I've come around. Like it's really working for me in a way that you're right. It hasn't really gelled before. That cohesion with we use this word so much, but like world building, even within an existing world, is just as important.
Yeah. And for me, as a big fan of the Marvel Universe, the way Hickman is tapping into these parts that really haven't been used that much and the cosmic stuff that really has been kind of neglected for about 10 years
mm-hmm.
and making it such a exciting story to read. You know, it's pure epic battle, and it's pure heroics,
mm-hmm.
and that's fun to read, especially when you don't feel like the art is rushed, and they're using C-level creators who are kind of new maybe to comics and work cheap that sort of thing. It's like the creative teams that they have on these books keep it feeling similar,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't feel cheap. It doesn't feel like you're getting shorted on the execution.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes a long way.
Yeah.
It's like anything with an Infinity banner on it, I picked up because I wanted to find out about it. Even something like Thunderbolts, which is pretty ancillary.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to read that because it's like, I want to find out what's going on the ground. And then it's like, I read that, and it's like, oh, I really like what Soleil's doing in Thunderbolts. I'm going to keep reading after this event's over.
So ideally, then, once the event calms down and we have, like, the event after the event, right?
Yeah.
Like, how much of a break do we get before everything picks back up again and is, like, huge once more?
I don't think you do. I think this rolls right into Inhumanity.
Okay.
Which is fine, because that's a premise that I want to read, too. Yeah, I could have event after event after event as long as it was good. You know, it's more like when people complain about, you know, having to buy all these books to keep up with it. It's because the story isn't keeping them engaged.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ultimately, don't we all want to read good comics every week?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Not to put too much into, like, speculation mode, but how do you think some of the announcements that came out of New York and, like, looking ahead at the titles in the spring with the relaunches, and everything seems very cosmic. Everything seems, I mean, we're not Avengers World anymore. We're Avengers Universe. I don't know. That can be a little off-putting as a reader, because we're losing the, the literal Earth touchstone.
That's fine. I don't mind that at all. I think it's better to have a big universe as long as it's interesting. It doesn't have to be on Earth. There's a big universe out there with lots going on, and it's all interesting stuff, and it all ties back to Earth anyway. You know, we're very Earth-centric anyway.
Right.
So let's do it.
There's some pretty big trends that have been put into place for that, though. I don't know. I have confidence because of the way that this entire event has been implemented, and I am enjoying it. I don't have the same, like, level of effusive joy that you do, which is adorable, by the way, but it's good writing, it's good comics, and you're absolutely right that that's what I'm looking for.
I am an unabashed Hickman fanboy because he writes comic books that get me super excited.
That's awesome. Don't necessarily want every single Avengers related title to be set in space, though. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, we'll get back and grounded.
Okay.
Let's go fly around the universe for a while.
Okay, fair
enough.
Want to
talk about some zombies, maybe?
Anything for you, dear.
Yes, let's do it. It's been a month since we last checked in on grief counseling. For those of you who are new to the show, Andrea read the first 8 volumes of The Walking Dead for the first time, sharing her thoughts on the comic and her fears. It was pretty brutal. And being the benevolent dictator that I am, I granted her a reprieve after volume 8. It was appropriately titled Made to Suffer. It was my favorite. This being the Halloween show and all, we thought maybe enough time had passed that Andrea could read volume 9, Here We Remain, and let us know how it was, and how she's doing. We recorded this earlier, immediately after she finished volume 9. Andrea, what happened?
I'm fine.
That seemed very defensive.
I'm actually kind of pissed at you.
Why?
Because you, I feel like you have no confidence in my ability to handle this book anymore. Now, admittedly, after the last one, neither did I. But I've recovered significantly. And this was much closer in tone to some of the earlier volumes. And I feel like you fucking set me up for failure. And I didn't fail.
I understand your anger. And it's okay for you to place it on me. I don't know if that's the... That's the right thing to do, but I understand it.
So, okay. So I read it, you know, a couple minutes ago, right? I started about an hour ago, and I just sort of dove right in without looking back. And I'm not going to. I have some questions about where some of the characters ended up, and we dealt with that after volume 8. I had a lot of concern and questions about, like, where Andrea was and where Glenn was and what happened to Maggie, and it was just so chaotic. But there's no way that I am comfortable or even, like, interested in going back and flipping through volume 8. That being said, surprise, like, not everybody's dead. So that was interesting. The biggest like crazy pants thing that happened.
So is that a relief?
Hold that thought. Let me get to that. Because if you recall, the way that it's revealed, volume 8 ends on this tragic, horrible note. You have no idea where anybody is except for Rick and Carl, and it's devastating, etc. Okay. So here we see them. Oh, actually, we check in with Michonne first. So that's, like, fantastic. Because all of the stuff that I initially said about her, I've gotten over, and she's a rock star still. Shut up.
Go on.
So I was pleased, super pleased that she wasn't dead, and hoping very much that she and Rick and Carl would, like, find one another. But we flash over to them, and they're hanging out in houses and, like, you know, back to looking for canned goods. And then Rick starts talking on the phone, which is fucking bonkers. And for several pages, I'm like, what is going on here? How is this a thing? I'm really glad that I'm not smart enough to catch on to this stuff, because I had no idea what was going to happen. Do you remember what happens?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, there's this moment where he's like, oh, I didn't even ask your name, and it's Lori, and it's not, and it's all in his head, and wow, that was crazy. It was good. It was actually good. Like, this is me saying that that moment in this book was, like, really well-crafted and totally sucked me in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I fucking hate you. That's what I mean. Like, you said I was going to be really upset about this book. Not everybody else told me that I was going to feel that way about this volume. In fact, I was reassured that it was going to be better. Like, the worst was over. And that is, in fact, a little bit true.
Kind of.
For now.
Yeah.
For now.
It's a different stage now.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
It's the PTSD stage.
Is it? Because I don't know. If the first part of PTSD is, like, total denial and avoiding actually dealing with the trauma, then, yeah, then we're solidly in that. And maybe I am, too. That's cool. But from a storytelling point, and brace yourself, Aaron, I'm actually a little bit on board with wanting to know what's going to happen next.
Oh, no. This doesn't come as a surprise to me. Look, and you can hate me all you want.
I do.
I knew you would like this book.
No. I did not say like.
Yeah, well, that's next volume.
No, I did not say like. I said I didn't hate it. And I didn't cry.
Let me ask you something. How many volumes of this do you own now? We're on volume 9 now. I'm just curious. How many have you purchased?
What kind of, like, game are you playing here?
This isn't... I'm just asking a question. Just answer the question.
I believe that I have up through volume 16.
Oh, interesting.
Uh-huh.
Huh. For a book that you don't like,
I don't.
You purchased a lot of them.
Well, I made a promise that I was going to continue reading it. Not to you, because I hate you.
Right.
But also, I don't hate it. Right now, right in this moment, I make absolutely no guarantees that I'm not going to flip-flop back to being just soul-crushingly devastated next time we do this, which, incidentally, is not going to be next week, or the week after, or, you know, anytime soon.
Mm-hmm. But we'll see.
Right now, I don't know. This is heading in an interesting direction in terms of potential origin of the, like, plague, zombification, etc. The travel to Washington, D.C., the introduction of a couple of new characters, the reintroduction of some people that I thought were dead. So I feel better, loads better than I did at the end of Volume 8, which we're not going to speak about ever again.
But you will admit at this point now, you care for these characters.
Not every single one of them. I still don't know how to feel about Rick. I really don't, and that's kind of a shame, and maybe an important point, that I wish that I had more sympathy for him as a character. I obviously have a lot of sympathy for what happened at the end of the last volume. But I don't really like him as a, like, stock male character. On the other hand, kind of watching what he's dealing with now and the way he's sort of absolved himself of his leadership role is actually really interesting. And so watching him work through the grief and the trauma is likely to make me more sympathetic.
Yeah, Rick is a very complex character, and I think that's what makes him compelling.
He struck me as much more one-dimensional for a long time.
Sure, but this is a long book, and all of the characters are evolving. I think Michonne seems very one-dimensional when you first meet her as well.
Right.
Even Andrea as well.
I I'm interested in hearing. I mean, maybe.
I mean, I was talking about you.
Yeah, yeah. Shut up. Okay. I'm interested in finding out like what happened with Andrea and Glenn. After, like, how did they escape? Because it was so unclear that that was even a possibility. So that's, I don't know if, obviously I don't know if we're going to ever go back and deal with that. It's almost not necessary. I'm just sort of curious.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that this is, it's evolving. It's more sophisticated. And as long as we can stay away from the stuff that is, like, really gratuitously unpleasant, then I think I can handle this for a little bit longer. I know there's a big, horrible, terrible, awful, no good, very bad thing that happens in issue 100. I'm not an idiot. I don't know what it is, but I know that something happens. So
that's a ways off. And
it's a long ways off. I think
for you, it would be better if you didn't spoil it.
Oh, I'm not going to. And nobody that I'm talking to about this book is going to spoil it for me. But I think I'm not, this is not being added to my list, like, as a regular read.
No, and for most people, I don't even recommend this almost as a issues book. I read it in issues.
You read everything in issues.
I read everything in issues, but there are definitely books that are better, I think would be better in arcs. And Walking Dead is definitely a better arc kind of book. So I think it's good the way you're reading it.
But I'm not, like, stuff aside, I'm not immediately jumping off to, like, read the next volume. I feel like I got enough of it under my belt to have a solid understanding of the world so that when I do pick it up after a month, it's familiar without being overwhelming. So that's, like, emotionally, that's a good balance for me to be able to handle any of the crazier developments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's understandable. Well, I'm glad to have you back. It's good to have you back in counseling.
Oh, fuck you. Did you know? I mean, were you messing with me? Did you know that it was going to be okay?
Yeah.
So why did you tell me that it was not?
Well, it's not. It's not okay.
No, but, I mean, comparatively.
Oh, well, I was just looking for a higher emotional response from you. I like to keep you on edge.
Right. Thanks.
Look, it's for the show.
Uh-huh. You are a very cruel man.
I'm crafty. Some would call diabolical.
Some would. I'm sure you would eat that right up.
I do it for everyone else. It's not for me. It's for the listeners.
Right. Well, happy Halloween, everybody. I read Walking Dead Volume 9, and I am still alive to tell the tale. So sorry to disappoint you, but maybe next time.
Well, I think that's enough counseling for 1 week. Now we have a extra awesome interview with Christopher Sabella.
Yeah, good stuff. Let's move on.
All right.
I miss blasting fire raids. Also, the Marvel Universe, Doctor Strange, had good scones often, and I liked them, even though I have no mouth. I'm not a space knight. This is anonymous. Do not worry. It is all fine.
It wouldn't be a special Halloween edition of The Couch without a scary guest. But when that fell through, we asked writer Christopher Sabella if he'd be willing to chat with us instead. You might know Chris as a shining beacon of light in the comics world, a force of positive energy, rainbows and puppy dogs, unicorns, etc. Right. Actually, Chris is the writer behind High Crimes, published by Monkey Brain Comics, and the upcoming Alien vs. Predator from Dark Horse. He's the co-writer of Ghost, also from Dark Horse, and has co-written Captain Marvel and Fantastic Four from Marvel. His first book, Screamland, was published by Image Comics, and he's also a contributor to Rachel Deering's upcoming In the Dark anthology, published by IDW, both of which are solid horror cred, by my standards anyway. Thanks for joining us, Chris.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, are you ready to get into it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Well, you know, we're both big fans of High Crimes. And we're, of course, really excited for the Alien vs. Predator news. That was really huge. So can you talk to us about some of the projects you've got coming up, things that are in the works right now that you can talk about? Just give us some context for things that you're working on and that we can expect to see from you.
Yeah, I think this week the solicits go out for, I'm doing a four-part Dark Horse Presents story Brian Chirilla and Dave Stewart.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, which is another horror piece, and is actually the first thing I ever wrote for comics, like 10 years ago. So,
was that the secret meetings you and Brian would tweet about or put out Instagrams about, like meeting in the coffee shops to sketch out story ideas?
No, that's Brian and I live fairly close to each other, so I work at this 24-hour coffee shop, and he is on the way, so I will stop and we'll stand outside his house and smoke cigarettes. and occasionally he will leave his house and come visit me at the coffee shop.
Wow.
So, yeah, I'm excited about that. Next month, I have a story in Shadow Man 12 that Matthew Southworth drew.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then I've got two books that are pretty close to being all wrapped up contract stuff wise. So nothing really else to talk about for this year, but I think next year is going to be a ton of stuff for me, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Well, you do have a bunch of things. I mean, you're working on Ghost with Kelly Sue, right?
Right, right.
And you got Alien versus Predator. So I'd say you're busy already.
So where is your favorite place to write? And does it matter which book you're working on? Like, how does your process change, I guess, when you're collaborating with other people versus when you're writing on your own?
It only really changes when I'm collaborating with somebody. Pretty much it's only really changed for Captain Marvel and Fantastic Four. And that's because, you know, Matt and Kelly Sue, like, we will sit down and talk out sort of what the story's going to be. But as far as writing goes, my process is pretty much I go to this insane 24-hour coffee shop anywhere between 8 to 10 p.m., and I'm there until about 2 to 4 in the morning, and that's my process.
But it's important for you to be in, like, a public place?
Yeah, I think I've sort of it's a habit I need to break out of, but for the last couple of years, I've been doing a lot of nonstop production work in comics, and before that I've been freelancing doing graphic design and production work. So, like, working from home, it's very hard for me to sort of say, like, okay, now work is done and now I'm going to write, which is also work, but it's not. Like, work to me is something that I have to do, and writing is something that I enjoy doing. So
having that kind of that change of scenery is a mental way of switching gears.
Yeah, and it's also that, you know, there's something to be said for, you know, going to work, like the ritual of, like, packing your stuff up and, you know, this is where I have to be, so I'm going to go there, and then when I get there, I will start working. Like, I've been freelancing for the last 7 or 8 years, so you kind of, at first, you're really happy that you don't have to go anywhere, and then you start realizing, like, oh, I wish I had an excuse to get out of the house.
Yeah, you start to get a little too isolated and stir crazy.
Yeah, and also, I think I've worked out this theory that I have sort of, like, rage writing, because this coffee shop I go to, because of the fact that it's open 24 hours, all sorts of degenerates like myself drift in and out of there, and they're sitting around, like, it's a public place, but they're talking about, like, the most horrible things, or, like, you know, there will be children running around at 2 a.m. in the smoking section. And I don't know, something about that, like, it aggravates me, but it's also, like, sort of gets me to where I need to be to sort of, it's like I team up aggressively tuning them out with actually getting to work. And I wish I understood how all this worked.
Does some of the bleed through from the conversations ever kind of give you story ideas or inspirations?
Not really, sadly.
They, like, sound like really horrible people, so.
Yeah, which is useful, but, like, I think I might have stolen a line from a guy there last week who, he was talking with this woman and she was complaining about somebody and he offered to kill her friend for her. And he,
like,
was like,
seriously?
I'm assuming they were joking, but then he threw in, like, you know, the bullet's free. And I was like, well, it's maybe, like, conversational stuff I can pick up, but mostly it's just
mostly it's fodder for Twitter. And when I should be working, I will just start relating, like, here's all the horrible things going on around me right now.
Do you work with music? Like, do you ever just put your headphones in to tune it out? Or
Yeah. But it's not hard and fast. I've never been one of those people who's like, you know, I can only work to instrumental music, or, you know, I have to work in silence. I think silence actually works against me. I had a studio space for a couple months and I got nothing done in that space because it was perfectly peaceful and I had no idea what to do.
Nice.
And with music, like, it's sort of, sometimes it just sort of gets in the way. Either like I'm too familiar with it or I'm not familiar enough with it. It's all no hard and fast rule.
No, I get that. There's like a sweet spot, because if you know it too well, then you can't tune it out. But if it's brand new, no, I totally understand.
Yeah, I think I do most of my listening actually on the way to the coffee shop. And I tend to sort of listen to things that are in line with what I have to work on that night. So that is really useful for me. I tend to use songs as even like character cues.
Do you have an example?
Yeah. I was actually going to post this on the High Crimes Tumblr, but I haven't gotten around to it yet. But one of the there's this band called Titus Andronicus from New Jersey, and they have this song, No Future Part 3, Escape from No Future. And it is basically a song, like the narrator talking about like, what a dreadful, dismal existence he has in New Jersey. It's a song about coping with depression and getting on medication. The final chorus of the song is really triumphant. Like, it's really sing-along, but it's like everybody in the band and probably several people they brought in all chanting, you will always be a loser. But it's really upbeat. Like, I know it doesn't sound like that, but like when you hear it, like, well, the very final line is, and that's okay. And like I made a connection between that and Zan in High Crimes. And suddenly it was like, oh, okay. Like, now I sort of helped me get her a little bit more.
Yeah, that seems very keyed into the personality that you've created with her.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, I don't want to be that pretentious dude who says like, you know, oh, the character tells me what to do. But it's totally true. Like, I've thrown out so many of the ideas that were already sort of set out in the outline, because suddenly I was like, oh, well, Zan wouldn't do that. And she'd probably be mad if I made her do that. So
yeah, you know, I would say before we started interviewing creators, I would have thought that would have been hard for me to kind of understand, but I think that's a common thing that we're finding. The characters take on a life of their own, and then how the creator writes that character grows and evolves, just like any kind of relationship.
Yeah, yeah. It's just weird. Like, it's never, I don't know, it's never clicked this hard with me. So it was like, suddenly I was like, oh, like, you know, it's like when you, I don't know, I can't think of a proper analogy, but it's just like that.
Well, let's take a step to the side, and I have a question about early life. So you've been watching a lot of horror movies lately, and I guess it's the season for it. So movies or everything, what's the first thing that you remember really scaring you? And on top of that, what's something from your childhood, if it was that or something else, that still scares you today?
I think I have like twin memories of the first things that scared me. One was hearing the Halloween theme song.
Really?
Yeah.
Just the song.
Yeah. No, like, I knew about that movie as a thing. And I remember as a kid, and we lived in an apartment, and my mom was watching it in maybe the kitchen. And I remember like I couldn't get away from the theme song. And it just terrified me, because I knew something really bad was going along with that music. And I remember like trying to get as far to the other end of the apartment as possible to block it out. So it was either that or Tobe Hooper's Salem's Lot. The kid, you know, floating up to the window and sort of scratching on the glass.
Yeah.
That sort of invaded my nightmares for a lot of years. As far as like what, I don't get scared by horror movies, which is it's kind of a bummer, actually. Like, I don't get scared by stuff. I love to get scared by stuff, but the only thing that really scares me are haunted houses.
Like when Halloween, like when they put together a haunted house or an actual house.
I just realized I should have opened with that.
What about the Halloween theme song? Does that elicit a visceral reaction at all?
No. When I finally saw the movie, it was after. By that point, I had seen so many slasher movies that
it was anticlimactic.
Yeah, it was kind of a letdown. I still think it's a really effective theme, but it does not. Nothing about Halloween scares me.
Well, it seems like our own imaginations are really the thing that'll scare us the most. Like, knowing just enough about something to let your mind fill in the rest is probably more scary than anything you could ever see.
Oh, yeah. And I remember, I'm not sure why my mom bought me this, but I had this huge book of, it was like the history of horror movies. And I remember there's a double page spread of Veronica Cartwright in Alien. When the xenomorph is approaching her and she's like terrified, like, and it was a double page spread. And like, that was all I knew about the movie. and it scared the hell out of me. And that was like the first time I ever knew what Aliens was that. And that like haunted me for a long time until I finally watched the movie.
So when you watch horror movies now, like for fun, what are you getting out of it? If it's not scary anymore?
I think more disturbing is what I'm after now, because I sort of now lack the capacity to be scared by movies. It's more like, how far can this movie go? Like, can this movie make me like look away or pause just squirm?
I guess it's weird then to ask you.
I mean, I think like the last. Favorite. Do I have a favorite?
Yeah, like it's, I don't know. It's weird to say. Do you have a favorite movie that has made you uncomfortable or look away because it's alarming? But I'm going to ask it anyway.
Yeah, I was actually just talking about this with someone. There was this whole wave. It was only for like 2 years, a couple of years ago in France. And it was called New French Extremity. And it was all these French directors sort of all went insane at the same time and started cranking out these really brutal horror movies. And each one was like, oh, well, I see what you did in that movie, and I'm going to one-up you. So there was a movie called Inside, which takes place only in an apartment, and it's a pregnant woman being attacked by a crazy lady with a pair of scissors. And I don't recommend anybody watch it, because it's the only movie – I remember the first time I watched it – well, it's the only time I watched it, but I screamed, like I was just yelling, like, please make this stop. Like this, but I didn't pause it or turn it off. I was like, let's just get past this point so I can finish this movie. So yeah, I mean, there's lots I could, that is the one that was sort of the most visceral. Last year I watched, you know, I do the thing that everybody does where you watch 31 horror movies every October.
Right.
And last
I don't
year,
do that.
Well, that many people do.
Right.
many good people.
I'm afraid of everything, so absolutely none of what you're recommending or not recommending is ever going to...
Oh, yeah. No. That's, your life will be perfectly fine without it. Yeah, and I ended up watching... I was doing a lot of flatting back then, so I ended up watching like 78 movies in October. 78 horror movies. And I got to this one called Megan is Missing, which is like a found footage, fake documentary. Really crappy, but the last 20 minutes were so... That's probably the rare time that a horror movie is like... I felt scarred afterwards. Like I just felt really bad. Which was interesting, because like that doesn't happen very often. And it was a really terrible movie, but like for 20 minutes... They totally figured out like what makes me tick and what would get to me most. So that's sort of like what I'm in search of with horror movies, is like finding somebody who can like make, you know, the fact that like you can sit down and watch something and like it can completely wreck your day is always sort of fascinating to me. So
not me, but
yeah.
So what are your vices? Or I don't know if it's better to call it an indulgence. That's fine. Like what are the things that you do for fun that you do, even if you shouldn't do them?
Wow. Well, smoking, obviously. I shouldn't do that, but I do. So, smoking and coffee, really. Like, I go to way too many movies. I eat sushi more than I should.
Because it's not
good for you? It's pretty boring, guys.
Like, what's the problem with sushi?
It's more, it's just, you know, I should be, like, not spending that money.
Got it.
Yeah, that most of my vices are ruled by the fact that, like, you know, I'm just trying to sort of lay low financially. So that's what I consider an indulgence, is like, oh, I'm going to go to a movie, or like, you know, I will go out for two drinks. But I just, every time I'm not working, and I know this is unhealthy, but like, I just keep thinking like, oh, I could be working. Like,
so your life work balance is out of whack, like basically everybody else we've talked to.
Yeah, I'm slowly trying to reclaim some balance. I officially quit flatting like a month and a half ago, maybe, which was hard because it was like, oh, here's all this money I could have. But I finally had to be like, I have to allow myself at least a day off a week where I can do whatever I want. And I don't have to sweat deadlines or anything. Like, I can actually, like, enjoy myself like human beings are supposed to.
Okay, well, I have a very generic question. But okay. It says a lot about people.
All right.
So if you could take one book, one movie, and one album with you to a deserted island, what would they be? Choose wisely. We can assume that food and all the other, you know, basic needs are taken care of.
So I'm going to, of course, check, are box sets allowed, or is this one single CD?
You can take a box set, sure. I'll allow it.
I really suck at these questions.
That's why you're getting it.
Yeah, yeah. They're not meant to be that easy. It's meant to all make right, you think.
That's fair. Okay, movie, Midnight Run. Album, what was the other one?
And book.
Book, Wind Up Bird Chronicles by Haruki Murakami. And then album would be, I'm going to go with the new Churches album, because that's the album I'm listening to a lot. So,
and you're not tired of it yet, so I guess that's good.
Oh, I sort of am, but I can't think of an answer to that. So that's
so it's a cop-out.
It is, yeah.
That's fine.
That's okay. That's all of it is revealing.
Yeah, I shot straight on the other two, but that one's it.
Okay, well, how about this one? Do you have any close calls you're willing to share? Something really stupid or dangerous that you did under the foggy curtain of youth that, looking back, could have turned out really, really poorly?
Oh, yeah. I got a lot. Let's see. And most of it isn't under the foggy curtain of youth. Like, most of this is in the last 10 years. Let's see. Back when I lived in Kansas City, I used to give a lot of people rides. Like, people would approach me at a gas station and be like, hey, could you give me a lift to so-and-so? And I'd feel beneficent and be like, sure. Or, you know, I'd run into. Once I was just driving to a coffee shop early in the morning, and a guy on the curb was like, hey, can you give me a ride down to the plaza? And I was like, yeah, okay. And he got in and he didn't say a word the entire time. And neither did I. And we just silently drove down there, and then I let him out.
How long of a drive is that?
It was like, you know, 10 minutes tops. But yeah, so any one of those people could have knifed me. God, yeah, I've, you know, last year I drove, or no, it was 2 years ago where I decided I was going to go to LA from Portland. So I drove all the way there. And then I only stayed for 2 days. And then that night after the show I was at, it was 11 p.m. And I was like, I'm going to drive back to Portland, which I got about 10 hours into the drive. And I started like, I had to pull off on the side of a mountain to crawl in the back and go to sleep. I live my life pretty much like embracing any stupid decision I can make that might result in an interesting story afterwards.
It sounds like you're very dangerous, or you embrace danger in a car too. There's something about a vehicle, right?
It's very liberating. Yeah, like, who can hurt me? Like, I'm in a car. But I've never picked, that is in my bucket list, is like, I want to pick up a hitchhiker on the highway and give him a ride. Say, I don't know how to play those odds. Like, my murder dar is not great. So you got to figure out, like, where are they going to sit?
The last time I did it, I picked up two guys that were by the side of the road, I don't know why I pulled over. They got in. Nice enough guys. They looked like they'd been camping. We were driving about 20 minutes, and the guy said, you got to let me outside, off outside of town. I got a couple warrants for my arrest. And his buddy was, like, looking pretty dicey, and I let him out, and I was okay. But I thought, like, why did I pull over? That was made no sense whatsoever. So you can learn from my lesson.
But like I've had I've had my car break down on the highway and had like a trucker pull over and pick me up. So like I feel like I want to be that dude. I want to be that dude who just like swoops in and like does a small kindness for somebody and then just leaves and like that's it. And like I cement a small place in their head as like, you know, maybe all of humanity isn't a piece of shit.
Wow. I'm all about random acts of kindness, but maybe it's because I'm a girl, but hitchhikers aren't on my bucket list.
Yeah, I feel like I have to do it soon or I'm never going to do it. So.
So being magnanimous and doing good for the world aside, let's talk about comics again.
All right.
And High Crimes. So yes. you and Ibrahim Mustafa are doing a great work with that. This is your first creator-owned series, right?
Right. And well, technically, Screamland.
Screamland was your first?
Yeah, although I don't... but this was, my first, like, solo creator-owned book.
Okay, so let's say... So has the success of this title changed kind of, like, your long-term plans for the story? Like, was it planned to be, a certain amount of issues, and now it's doing well, so it's going to go on longer, or the whole arc and that sort of thing?
Oh, no. I mean, we know where we're going with it, and that's where we're going with it. Plus, more than anything, like, we are pleasantly shocked by how well it's been received. And each issue is, like, us doing what we set out to do and hoping that, you know, people hang on for it. Because I know, for me personally, every issue is just fraught with self-doubt and self-loathing. And every issue is, like, this is the one where they're all going to figure out I'm a fraud.
Does that not come into play, really, when you're working on like a licensed book like Alien versus Predator or something like that? Is the pressure off on your writing?
It's different. So working on Captain Marvel, there was a lot of pressure just because that is so much Kelly Sue's book that even me like coming on board was like, I don't know how to do this. But like, you know, so many of the fans are so in love with Carol Danvers, and I, you know, the pressure there was like, don't screw it up. Like, don't get in the way. Like, I was there basically as support staff. And like with Ghost is just a lot of fun to write. So there's not that pressure on me or AVP. It's just High Crimes is so personal to me that like, mm-hmm. I know what I want to do with it. And it's just like the real estate is limited, and I don't know. There's so many factors as to why that book just haunts me constantly. But I feel like it pays off in the end, like all this sort of dithering that I do and writing and rewriting ultimately serves the book the best. So I've just sort of given up on shaking this.
It's good to use your angst in a positive way.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what I'm going to do when High Crimes is over. I mean, I'm sure I will just transfer that to a new creator-owned project. But, you know, I've had inklings of High Crimes since 2006 or 7. So it's been a very long road, and I'm just trying to get to the end without blowing it.
Well, you've talked a lot about the research that you did for High Crimes, and I know that Aaron's not as into all of the process stuff as I am, but I think it's fucking great when you share that.
Okay.
What's the research that you've had to do to shift gears for something like Alien versus Predator? Because in my world, that's just like sitting down and watching a bunch of movies.
There is a lot of watching movies. There's lots of Googling. Most of the work on that so far has been in the writer's room, because we all get together at Scott Alley, who's the head editor at Dark Horse. We all meet at his house, and it's me, Paul Tobin, Chris Robertson, Josh Williamson, and several editors and an artist or two. And that's where we all sort of like break down each other's stories and figure things out. So that is a very different animal where we don't have to do a lot of research. It's more like we just have to sort of communicate and listen. So it's a very... That's why I wanted to do this project so much, is like I'm fascinated by that sort of like back and forth writer's room exchange of ideas, where suddenly
nobody has any idea anymore who came up with what.
Yeah, that's quite a power team to get together and figure out a story.
Yeah, it was intimidating. It still is, but you know, this is stuff I grew up on, and the fact that like I get to work on it is pretty thrilling. So that tends to, you know, I'm definitely sweating AVP that like I want this book to be great, and I want the fans of both franchises to be into it. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of pressure there, but it's not, I don't know. It's a very different kind of pressure to me. It's not as, it doesn't live as deeply inside me as the pressure for High Crimes.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. I mean, it's a different creative process entirely.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of creative process and comics just in general, so this is your chance to tell everyone, besides your own comics, of course, what should everyone be reading?
Oh, let's see. I really like Sheltered right now.
Yeah.
Let's see. Theremin from Kurt Pyers and Dalton Rose from Monkey Brain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, Pretty Deadly and Sex Criminals.
Yeah.
Actually, like, yeah, right now I'm actually sort of when I don't, my reading has really dropped off, but right now I'm doing a lot of older reading. So I'm finally reading the entire Shade, The Changing Man from Peter Milligan and Chris Boccolo,
mm-hmm.
which is very good and also very not upbeat. So I wouldn't recommend it if you get sad easily. and then I'm finally, for the first time, I'm rereading Strike Force Mortuorae.
Oh yeah,
which is a book that like I always loved as a concept.
Yeah, it has a great premise. It's very 80s.
It is very 80s. I was kind of surprised though, like how I think by and large, like you could sort of put that book out now and you know tweak a few things, but it's not too far off. Like just by writing style. I'm used to, you know, that sort of in the 80s where thought bubbles were just all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
That really sort of like occasionally, you know, the stuff that like becomes the comics trope of like, well, here is two paragraphs of me explaining everything that happened in the last issue.
Right. A lot of exposition.
Yeah. And there's not a lot of that. Like it's a pretty lean little book. I'm only, you know, 7 or 8 issues in, but
what's the, it's like for those about to die, we salute you.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Well, I don't know if salute you is in there.
Maybe I'm mixing AC/DC and
I think you are. I think you are. Yes.
I think I like that better. I want to hear that parody cover.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Well, thank you, Chris. This was a blast. Any last gems that you want to drop on our listeners?
Yeah. What? Just say whatever.
Yeah,
I don't know. Big shit up, it's fine.
Okay.
If you have no wisdom to offer, it's also okay.
You could also say, for those about to die, we salute you.
Yeah. No, I want to leave on a profound note, but I don't really have any profound notes today. Oh, damn it.
Say your prayers, take your vitamins.
See, you should have sent me this question, at least.
You said like, surprise you.
Yeah, I should have prepped, at least. I've heard your other interviews, so I should have known this was coming. You know, everybody buy my comic books.
Oh, that's sweet. That's
yeah. We also have t-shirts on sale at the moment, so I think they will still be on sale when you listen to this, so... Yeah, give me some money. No, that's terrible. Can you just cut that out? I'm so sorry. I'm ashamed of myself.
This is why we had you on, because you're very entertaining.
Yeah, all right. Well, there you go. There's my pull.
Wonderful.
Give me money.
Yes. Give me money, I'm ashamed of myself.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it all up.
Well, thank you very much, Chris, for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks to everyone, of course, for checking out another episode of Comics Therapy. You can always find the show notes, Nerd Confessions, and how to submit them. It's all on the website, comicstherapy.com. Remember to pre-order your comics. It makes or breaks independent comic books. Happy Halloween, post or pre, and stay safe, you crazy kids. Here, but now they're gone.
paper, nor do the wind, the sun, or the rain.